Hello and welcome. As always, even though we are under the Two Generations Gaming banner, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series I am reading Dragons of Fate, the second book in the Dragonlance Destinies series by Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. In this episode, I'm going to cover chapters 4, 5, and 6, and then I will give you my reaction to it at the end of the episode. Chapter 4. We left off last episode with Taz running back into the clearing and shouting at Destina the goblins followed him there. We pick up this episode with him turning to taunt the goblins. Kender have this special power where they can taunt their enemies into a blind rage. As he does, he tells Destina to clobber them with his hoopack as he leads them to her. I realize I don't think I ever explained what a hoopack is. If you don't know what a hoopack is, it's a forked stick that they use as a slingshot and as a staff. Kender do. She takes out two with that plan. Taz battles with a sword-wielding goblin, bringing his rabbit slayer to a sword fight. The goblin swings, misses, tackles Taz, and puts his hand around Taz's throat to try to wring his neck. Destina takes the blade to help Taz when a woman drops from the trees, stabs the goblin, and frees Taz. She warns Destina of another attack. Destina swings wildly. The goblin knocks the dagger out of her hand and reaches for the gray gem. The gem flashes, charges the goblin, and she and the mystery woman regroup. The goblins, knowing that they're defeated, retreat. Destina gets a better look at the woman, an impossibly beautiful elf with silver hair. Quick editorial. I said the dragon disguised as a human. Nope, elf. She hopes that the woman missed the gray gem, but Taz, quote-unquote, helps by shouting about it burning the goblin, when it only gave him a weird feeling. Destina thanks her for the help. Introductions. Tasselhoff Burfoot, Lady Destina, Gwyneth. She admonishes Taz for being in possession of a ring. He, surprised, returns it. She tells him that her sister gifted her the ring, so it is special. Gwyneth turns conversation to the Greystone, or gray gem. She asks how Destina came into possession. Taz offers to explain. Destina, exhausted, snaps at him to just stop talking. They go back and forth before Gwyneth mentions that Tachesis will be looking to get the gem. The gem, she explains, can give the Dark Queen more power than all the other gods combined. She can corrupt and control the existing races, make new ones, and remake the world. Destina knows, again, she royally screwed the pooch, and Gwyneth apologizes for bringing it up and making her feel bad on top of everything else that she's enduring. Taz blabs about Huma and some future shit. Destina tries to distract him by asking him if he found water. This gives Gwyneth a chance to offer him water from a jug she made from a turtle shell to sate his thirst. It's revealed that the jug, not the water, is magical and refills when empty. So Destina drinks too. Taz blabs more about the song, parenthetically, not yet written, and Destina tries to motivate him to find Sturm and Raistlin. Taz invites Gwyneth to come along. Destina protests because she thinks that the woman might be a spy. Gwyneth, quote, I know you are, but what am I, end quote. Destina about the gray gem. Taz shrugs and tells them to get over themselves. Gwyneth explains herself as a peace offering. Destina, sufficiently embarrassed, simply falls into line and joins the two of them on the trek. Taz takes point ahead of them. Destina feels relieved that he can't blab to the two of them about crazy stuff anymore. Gwyneth explains that she represents the Qualinesti, parenthetically elves, and went on recon to see if they can prevent Tachesis from moving on to them after taking Salamnia. Destina's turn to let slip. She talks about an ocean, parenthetically her time, between the two nations instead of a common border. When Taz yelps after getting his hoopack stuck in brambles, Destina muses that she wishes him just to be quiet. Gwyneth replies that not even a god may quiet a Kender, but maybe she can at least stop him from talking about the stone. He comes back. Gwyneth helps him to remove the brambles and then offers to clean him up some more to be more presentable to meet Huma. She cleans the blood from his forehead with some spittle, like a mom. He asks if she knows Huma. She confirms that she knows nobody from Salamnia. Taz starts with, quote, Destina is from Salamnia, then starts spitting crazy shit again. Destina tries to distract him. Taz replies that they're getting close to the fighting. Gwyneth assures them that the fighting seems to be waning. But, Destina notices, more goblins amass and a red dragon patrols the sky near the tower. Gwyneth insists that Takisis isn't ready yet to attack. The dragon is the head of her advanced forces. All she needs is the tower to rule the land, so she sent the dragon to weaken them before the attack and ensure her victory. Destina talks about the blue dragon that attacked her castle and remarks on the size of the red. Gwyneth explains that he is larger and crueler than his kin. So he toys with the defenders as he awaits the actual attack, and his tactics prove useful. Many have fled their posts. Taz blabs about the dragons he's seen. A black Zach Saroth, his friend Fizban's gold named Pyrite, and his favorite, Silvara. The name seems to short-circuit Gwyneth for a moment, but she simply says it's just a recurring wound and she'll be fine. Destina lets her keep her secrets for now and tries to get more info about the red Immolatus. Gwyneth starts to explain, but Taz points out Sturm. He also shouts to Huma. Huma sees Gwyneth, and she sees him. He stares at her, even in the middle of the battle. She shudders when she sees him, and rushes off before Destina can ask what's wrong. Taz notices Gwyneth left when he realizes he's in possession of her water flask. He plants, parenthetically, or waters, if you haven't already figured it out, in parenthetical, the seed that Gwyneth reminds him of someone. Taz remains hopeful that she'll come back. Destina is doubtful. Besides, they have to get to Sturm and Raceland. She starts to feel the dragon fear. Immune, Taz comes to comfort her. They reconcile. Anytime Taz mentions the Grey Gem, he sneezes. Gwyneth's touch? Wow, that was a long and dense chapter. Chapter 5. They fill us in on Raceland's journey as he goes to find Sturm. Thankful to be alone and think, he muses about Fisna Dantalus, the bargain he made at the tower with the Lich, the fact that he can no longer hear the wizard's voice, and the ramifications of all of that. Basically, he lost all the power granted by the wizard and is back to himself being a low-level wizard. The story of Fist and Antlis is covered in the other books. You can also wiki it. It kind of gives me an idea. Maybe I can do a companion podcast that explains these things to new readers and what other books to read. Okay, back to the summary. Raceland moves on to their possible effect on the past. Part of that is him musing what might happen if they never returned. Without Fist and Antlis, and with Sturm on his side, maybe he can transition to the White Robes. But he digresses. Need to get going. The smoke gets thicker as he gets closer to the battle, but he notices it is more of a chaotic brawl than an actual war battle. Villagers fight the goblins with what they can find. As he goes, he keeps looking for Sturm, Huma, and Magius. He finds Sturm, who comes to help another soldier. Raceland also comes to help the wounded man. Sturm chastises him for leaving Destina. Raceland says the gem will assure that she's fine. Sturm, needed elsewhere, leaves. Raceland stays back to help the soldier. He gets the man's name. Yeoman Mullen Tully. Raceland assures the scared soldier that he only has a concussion, sprained knee, and bruised ribs. With the concussion, Tully barely remains conscious. Raceland tries to keep him talking so as to not succumb to the head injury. Tully says he came to warn them of the dragon. Raceland thinks that's a lie, and that the man deserted his post. Taz and Destina arrive. Raceland explains and says they need to get Tully out of danger. They work together to help the fat man walk into the woods. Taz offers water from the jug and mentions Gwyneth. Taz still sneezes every time he tries to talk about the gem. Raceland takes Destina further away to get out of earshot of Tully, and they talk about Gwyneth, the gem, Taz, and Tully. Raceland gives his suspicions about the soldier, explains that the sneezes are possibly magic. She tells him that Gwyneth ran off when she saw Huma. They stop talking when they hear someone. Taz comes into the clearing, announcing the arrival of Magius with him by saying that he's got Raceland's staff. Chapter 6. Magius appears behind Taz. Raceland knows that the man is in his 30s, far beyond Raceland's current ability as a mage. Magius walks slowly, leaning on the staff. He may be exhausted, Raceland thinks, or he might be sandbagging. Raceland did so himself a couple of times. Taz says that Sturm and Huma are getting a litter to help Tully. Taz introduces Raceland, and he admits that his appearance and illness are symptoms of the test. While Huma is celebrated in the mist, only wizards tell the stories of Magius. Raceland cautions himself against meeting your heroes. Taz mentions again that he has Raceland's staff. This intrigues Magius. Raceland tries to deflect. Taz talks about the specific light command, even though he gets it wrong. Magius presses, and Taz talks about Raistlin having the staff in the future. Still, Magius is intrigued. Yuma saves them from having to explain more. While Sturmax dour, as if life is an unending series of trials and tribulations, Yuma goes through life with barely a care in the world. Raistlin notices how uncomfortable this makes Sturm. Meeting your idols and all, Sturm introduces them all. Yuma brings up the elf traveling with them. This leads them to a conversation about the elf that Yuma met. Magius counters that it was simply a dream. Then, Yuma tells the story of the stag. It ends with the injured stag getting up and running off. Taz counters, "That's not the story! He needs to go on the quest to find the Dragonlances." They write it off as Crazy Taz, and Sturm leads him away. But they all realize the repercussions if history is already being changed. The men arrive with the litter, and Raistlin goes to meet Taz and Sturm. They talk about how messed up things may already be with the missing Dragonlances. Taz goes on a tangent about Gwyneth and Silvara possibly being sisters. How can they discreetly put history back on the right track? Taz suggests just telling them about the Dragonlances. Sturm suggests finding the Silver Dragon to be closer to lore. Raistlin, frustrated and unsure that anything actually changed, suggests simply keeping quiet until they can verify. Taz, somber, insists someone needs to do something. And now for my reaction. Okay, 6 chapters in, and I definitely like this one better than the first. They put the future, parenthetically, or is it the present, on hold in favor of the past, parenthetically, or is it the present. That gives them the chance to do a few things. First, they introduce Gwyneth and add a bit of mystery to the story. I don't know if it's by design or just because I know so much about the story already, but the quote-unquote big reveal thudded like a sack of bricks. I knew as soon as they met Gwyneth that she was the dragon and Silvara was her sister. I wonder if new readers reach the same conclusion as quickly. Two, they explore Raistlin apart from Fist and Dantalus. I made the point that he treated Taz more gently and with more patience in the last episode. While he considers being back and still broken from the test, parenthetically, but without the corruption of the Lich, in parenthetical, that he considers the path of the white instead of the black. I always liked Raistlin originally, and then despised what he became, parenthetically, kind of like Teyka. I never considered that his dark turn came willingly, but with a huge shove in the wrong direction. Okay, some editorial. As I learn and grow, one of the things I learned is that I idolize the wrong type of person and for the wrong reasons. While not to the level of full-blown incel, I cheered the protagonists of Falling Down, as well as Walter White and Patrick Bateman for a bit. The same can be said for Raistlin. So, older and wiser, I appreciate this gentler Majir brother. Now back to the things that they were able to achieve by focusing on the party in the past, or is it the present? Takhesis, perhaps assumed as the eventual big bad, emerges as the potential accomplice to chaos to end Kryn as we know it. I thought, maybe with the unnamed dragon, that they might give us a new villain. Who knows? Maybe Takhesis makes a deal with another dragon and makes it a lieutenant. Or maybe it betrays her and bends Kryn to its will. For now, that remains even a mystery to me. Number 4. We meet Yuma and Magius. This comes with two warnings. First, the obvious, parenthetically and often repeated, refrain of meeting your heroes and finding them lacking. I can't say that I have much experience with that. The only famous people that I've met are we sat behind Danny Bonaducci on a plane from Boston to LA when we went on our honeymoon. I said, "That's Danny Bonaducci," and he nodded at me. Then, at a comic convention in Boston, my wife and I stood aside the paid Buffy area and talked with Amber Benson and Christopher Golden for about a half an hour. Both very cool and very nice people, willing to take the time to just sit there and chat with us, even though we didn't pay to meet them. The other lesson I took, parenthetically, mostly from Huma, is blindly adhering to an ideology. Your mileage may vary on this one, but I got the impression that both Sturm and Destina, unquestioningly believing the myth of Huma as stern and stoic leader of the Knights, got shocked to the core that not only doesn't their hero hold up to the legend, but their entire lives might be built on a lie. Sturm especially goes through life, crossing every T and dotting every I by the letter of the oath and the measure, to think that maybe, just maybe, he could both live life with honor and enjoy himself has got to be eye-opening, and maybe a bit of a kick in the pants. It remains to be seen how these interactions change the characters and their view of the world. Additionally, history may, parenthetically, or may not, but probably, in parenthetical, has been changed, and they need to figure out how to fix that if necessary. So as of right now, I'm going with the theory that this book is just better. I came up with more possible evidence that supports that. I read somewhere that Weiss and Hickman feuded with Wizards of the Coast over creative choices. Maybe they wrote Dragons of Deceit under protest or duress, and that's why it felt different from the other books. Not that they intentionally made it bad, but they just didn't try their hardest. And now, things settled, so they feel more comfortable, and it reflects in the quality. Every word of that is conjecture, by the way. I make no claims of knowledge of the inner workings of Wizards of the Coast or Weiss and Hickman. Just my analytic brain trying to figure things out. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles and a link to our socials, including our YouTube, where I'm doing the daily calendar, the Voidspark Chronicles by Sundial Games. I put up today's video, and I will continue to be daily, at least until next week. Next week, I start back to school. We have two teachers' days on Thursday and Friday, and then the week after, kids come back. So I'll see if I can stay daily. I'll try to do what I can to keep up with the calendar daily, even though I'm back in school and teaching and busy again. I've been working on getting our other socials, mainly the Instagram, up and running again. I posted a few things over the last couple of days, but things are moving slowly in that direction. I might end up doing the companion podcast that I talked about earlier, where I talk a little bit about some of the things in the book for new readers and places to find even more information on that. If so, that'll come out sometime this weekend, either Saturday or Sunday. If it doesn't come out this week, then I will be back on Tuesday with episode 3. I will either talk to you this weekend or on Tuesday. See you then. Bye, guys.
We are...